Hey, everybody. This podcast is brought to you by Documentary First Productions, and we need your support so that we can keep preserving history. If you could go over and grab some merch or watch our films at documentaryfirst.com, you'll help us keep making awesome documentaries and sharing the stories that matter, and also bring amazing filmmakers and their wonderful films to the world. So thank you so much for listening, and thank you for visiting documentaryfirst.com. Welcome to Documentary First, an inside look at documentary filmmaking. I'm your host, Christian Taylor, and a documentary filmmaker myself, and I'm so glad you're here. Today, we are bringing you part two of a special crossover episode from the Movie Rock Minute podcast. This moving interview features World War II veteran C.O. Bauer, and we're re-airing it here to make sure our Documentary First audience doesn't miss a moment of this incredible story. In this episode, C.O. opens up about some of his fellow soldiers, Tony, Steele, Darren, and others, and a powerful journey they took in the 1980s to retrace the steps of Company I. He also reflects on forgiveness, and particularly his decision to forgive Steele, and he shares more details about his wounding and the desperate search for help. You'll hear about CO's remarkable memory of Normandy, the story of invasion money, and how he was awarded his Purple Heart, and even how he and I first met, which of course led to his being in The Girl Who Wore Freedom. There's so much more packed into this episode. I promise it's one you won't forget. So come on, let's dive in. Enjoy the episode, everyone.
It did.
Did you forgive him, or did you still call him a son of a bitch?
Did you forgive him,
or did you call him a son of a bitch?
Did you forgive him? You talked to him about when you cussed him out, didn't you?
I asked him, "Well, you remember me cussing you out?" "No, I don't remember. I don't remember a thing." You know. So, and I believe him. Well, okay. I didn't really forgive him, but what I did was forgave Steele. And I didn't know where Steele was buried, but Steele is buried overseas, where General Patton is buried in,
Luxembourg.
He's buried there. I didn't know it, but, when we rifle guys started going over to, and you didn't hear that, we started in 1987, a carload of us going over to find out where we were and follow where I Company went. In fact, we even went to behind the Iron Curtain two or three times because my foxhole buddy Steve Bodner had relatives in Krakow.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, so... had relatives in Krakow, so we went there, which was a great experience. I can talk all day and all night about that behind the Iron Curtain.
Maybe next time.
Yeah, next time, yeah. But anyway, we went, of course, naturally, to go to General Patton's, pay respects to him. We did. And so...
And that's when you found out that Steve was...
You know, we were surprised to find out, you know, that they didn't bury him row on row. So many people came that they buried him separate where people could come and not tread down the, you know, find him. They buried out away from the regular graves. You probably knew that.
Maybe. Okay, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, but randomly we just started walking, you know, through the looking. And the next thing I knew, I was looking at Steele's cross. So I forgave him.
You know? Okay. It's important.
And then I repeated it last year. When we were there last spring, or last in November, we went back there and I deliberately went on purpose to Steele's grave once and spoke a little bit about it. I think You weren't there, Christian.
Mm-hmm. Not in
Christian
Luxembourg.
Wasn't there, no. So I did that.
But you forgave him. I don't think we said when you were coming back, you ran into Steele going in, and he just didn't help you.
No,
right?
Darren.
What happened?
Darren didn't. Darren was a sergeant.
And what did Steele do?
He wouldn't help. but Steele caught part of it. So I did it to both of them.
To both of them, okay.
Yeah, naturally.
Okay.
Talking. After that, then with no help, I had to get down and crawl through that stuff, and I crawled in, and I got in the house then. And I'll tell you, if the Germans had wanted to attack right then, they would have blown right through us, just like that, I'd say, because
good thing they didn't know.
yeah. Well, our mortars were, I don't know about the artillery, but our company mortars were, operating and firing on. So they would be discouraged from that.
Right.
They
sure.
were, yeah. Anyway, I got in the house and I got in the house. Well, again, nobody to help me. There was the guy or two that was, that was there, they weren't going to help me. They were going to be vigilant. And so I just wanted to get down cellar, down the stairs, down in the basement, because the platoon aid man was there. And he was tending to, 8 or 10 wounded guys down there in the basement.
Right.
And so I laid on the floor once again and cussed until finally a heavy weapons platoon officer showed up, and they'd been firing overhead fire. They'd been firing with water cooled machine guns. They'd fired during the attack, and they weren't firing anymore. And so he helped me down to the cellar, and there then I just laid there hoping for somebody to help me. And a guy named Burns from Chicago, you're from Chicago, yeah. That's one plus. he came over, and I couldn't see that he was very seriously wounded. But I couldn't see that he was. He came over and asked me if I'd taken my wound tablets. I said, no, I lost them. And so we had wound tablets. And say, well, you can have mine. You need them more than I do, he said.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I took them. And then, the first aid man, I think maybe he was killed later. I kind of heard that, but I'm not sure. This is things you hear,
right?
Reunions. But he came over and did what bandaging up he could on my leg and my arm. I had a bad wound on the arm too, which caused which cut the muscle, and so my actually hand hung down, didn't raise. It was just muscle. And then three of my fingers were down, not straight, not normal. But anyway,
they all look fine now.
Huh?
But I said they all look fine now. So I guess I'm
healed. Yeah, that's right. You're seeing them. That's right. You're seeing them, and I'm seeing you. Yeah. Yeah. I can put my thumbs up. Yeah. Yeah.
And for people that are just listening, we are going to put this on the Documentary First YouTube channel. So
yep.
If you do want to see CO and his moving hands or the photos of iCompany, you can go to the Documentary First YouTube channel, and we will put all that there. And
yeah,
you can see that.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
So anyway, it was probably, I had to wait, and the stretcher team came down, medics, stretcher team came down. Things were quieted down now, nothing happening. And at least right where we were. And so we wound up They put me on a stretcher and started to carry me back to Battalion Aid, which was probably a half mile back in town, in one of the buildings in town. And I'll always remember there was some incoming artillery from the Metz forts coming in, but it was going over us. It was, and I'll always remember telling the stretcher team, I wanted to get back to the Battalion Aid. I wanted to live. and when it would come over and it was already over, they were belatedly laying the stretcher down and taking cover. Well, I remember telling them, hey, keep going, you know, keep going, it's already passed. So I did that. I got back there, and once again, I had to wait. And, you know, there was wounded there till my turn and on the stretcher. And so when it was my turn, or before my turn, I looked over there, and who was there but Darren? He beat me back there, Tony Darren, the guy I cussed out.
Yeah.
And he was laying on another table, and so I don't recall that I talked to him at all, or that he would talk, but anyway, when you get to the doctor, and I even remember his name, it was Doc Herbert.
You have such a good memory. It's amazing.
Well, seriously, I'm so impressed.
Well, I remember that, but what you tell me now, I can't remember it.
What do you mean?
What do you mean? You tell me the number of this house.
Oh, you forgot it?
I forgot it. the only way I could remember it is put it on the slip.
Yes, I get it.
And remind myself every once in a while.
Okay.
I say, I'm different from other people that I
remember. Yes,
that
you
was,
are.
That was different. That was a life-shaking experience.
Yes.
Be wounded on the line in the dark inside the German lines. Who the hell can you talk to that's done that?
That's true.
Nobody. Very true. No, nobody.
Wow. Thank you very much for sharing
Anyway, Doc Herbert looked at me, you know, looked at my wounds and they actually cleaned them up. The first time, cleaned them up from the dirt and everything that was in it. And by the way, the first thing they do is cut your clothes off.
We're not going to go into detail.
Sure. Yeah, we're
not going to go into detail.
Okay. Nope.
I don't want to know all the dirty details.
And throw them away. So then he said, well, you're good enough. We can, you're not hurt bad enough. Well, he said, you're not hurt very bad. Well, I didn't believe that. I knew damn well I was hurt quite bad. but we can give you a sedative. So they did. They gave me that. But then I had to wait to be taken back to the field hospital, which was several miles back of the fighting, to the field hospital. And then the field hospital, that's where you'd get good attention, your first real medical attention.
Mm-hmm.
So, but on the way there, I was on a Jeep. And I always tell people that they wondered, you know, about you're riding a Jeep in World War II. I said, infantrymen had only two ways to get a ride in a Jeep.
If they were injured?
To be injured or killed.
Right.
Only two. Maybe it's the same way in the Israeli army. I don't know.
Thankfully, I haven't experienced either of those, so I couldn't tell you.
Well, but you probably talk to people, you know, so.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. Well, I haven't talked to anybody.
Stories about what happens. Yeah. That's where you learn things.
That is true.
Where you learn things about the real war.
But oh, yeah, for sure.
What happened. So anyway, I was laying on the upper stretcher. They put two on, one low and one high. Well, I was just laying, looking up, but being kind of sedated, kind of halfway, semi-dreaming, why, I thought I was looking down the road. So I was hallucinating that the machine gun fire was going across at stretcher height.
Mm.
And, oh, wow.
Oh, yeah. Well, but it didn't. Being sedated didn't seem to bother me. I just kind of steeled myself. Well, that's it. And I had did that 2-3 times before I realized, oh, hell, that's me. I'm just imagining that, you know, that's me. So the first thing in the hospital I got, I was sedated enough that I woke up sometime early in the morning. And the first thing that happened to me was that a lieutenant colonel came down the line carrying a Purple Heart. And I, for a couple of beds before me, he awarded the Purple Heart to the guy laying there. And one of them, I'll always remember, he, you know, you're mad when you're wounded.
And yeah.
I was mad, and this guy was mad.
You're mad, why?
Because you're wounded.
Yeah, and?
I even mistelled you how mad I was. I was mad that I laid there goddamn Roosevelt, goddamn Hitler, goddamn
Mussolini. You're mad at everybody.
God damn everybody, you're bad. and that's a good thing. If you can be bad, you're a good
that's shape. Right
you're good shape. So I did that, and when he got to me, but this guy gave the lieutenant colonel, what are you doing here? You know, you should be on the front line, you know. He did. Well, I'm well disciplined enough, you know, that wasn't right to be doing that, you know. But when he got to me, then you know, I didn't do that. You know, I was respectful and said, you know, you're awarded the Purple Heart, and I know that you can't keep it with you, so it'll be put in your effects, and you'll get it later. It'll come to you. Well, I got it later when I got back to USA.
Mm-hmm.
Which took how long? How long?
Well, I spent time in the hospital, and I didn't get back to USA till the first or second week of January 1945.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
And you know what I got in my stuff? All of my clothes. I even had a camera, but no film. You couldn't buy film back then. It's all gone to war, you know. And so I got my Purple Heart, minus my clothes, minus my camera, minus almost everything. Except my pocketbook, which I still have. Maybe Kim has got it. minus the invasion currency.
Oh, wow.
And the pictures of my family that I had in. That's all I got back from France.
So you didn't have your pictures of your family? They weren't in there?
They were in there.
They were in there. And your invasion money was in there?
No, you said the invasion money was not.
And so how much invasion money did they give you in the beginning? Do you remember?
Beats the hell out of me.
And did you ever spend any of it?
No place to spend.
Right, that's what I thought. You had
exactly.
Yeah, out in the woods or...
It's an emergency bus fare.
Yeah. Well, it was francs, of course, and it wasn't normal francs. It was printed here in the USA, and I don't know how they handle that. I imagine they They exchanged. They probably, the U.S. government was probably literally given money to the French government.
Probably.
You know, after basically, I know what happened.
What's
so,
that?
I know what happened. So after, if you were to buy bread, let's say, with the invasion money, okay, you gave it to a baker.
Yeah.
And so the baker had all this invasion money.
Yeah.
When the Marshall Plan came in, let's say, and they're starting to get the economy back up and running, the baker would take the invasion money to the, you know, the people that were, you know, the, what is it called? The sustainment people that were trying to help set up the government. And they would trade that invasion money for the francs, right?
Yeah.
So that's how it worked.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. There you go.
Very impressive. Yeah, there you go. Yeah. Wow. Thank you very much for telling that story. So now what's interesting to me is how did the two of you meet up? You know, like,
Christian.
I know Christian's story about Normandy and everything like that, but I don't know how, you know, she found you or you found her or whatever it is.
Oh, Christian found me, because I'm not computer literate and I don't find much of anybody, you know.
Okay.
Not able to search, but computer is Christian, I think, is a genius at doing computer work and all of that.
Do you actually know how I found you?
I don't, but I'll give my version, and you can give yours.
All right.
And then we'll let everyone decide what's the truth.
anyway, Christian called me and said, let me know she was coming, and would I participate, you know, in being interviewed. And so I'd been interviewed by people before, but I was just overwhelmed when Christian showed up with five people, something like that. She's a cameraman and a couple other people and somebody to do the sound and Christian. And I had called my local paper, which is a weekly, and said, hey, I'm being interviewed. Maybe you want to have a reporter down there. So they did. So here I wound up with I live in a bungalow style place, and I basically don't go upstairs or I don't go downstairs, and I live on the first floor all the time, live in a line from the front door to the back door. And that's it. Here I got all these people in the house. and here they've got the cameras and they've got the lights. They've got all this crazy stuff, the recording stuff. All in my room, plus the local reporter. So, Jesus. Anyway, and that's my first time to be actually movied, you know, videoed. My first time. So, I'm amazed at how they do it. You know, they have to get the lights right. And they have to get the, and then they say, wait until we write. And then as I recall, when they were, then they did clap, clap, or something like that. clap, that we're gonna film now.
Yeah.
Then they'd film a little while, and then they'd have to move me and set me again.
We didn't move you. We moved the cameras.
They moved the cameras?
Nobody can move you.
Yeah. Yeah.
Unless you choose to move.
So anyway, they kept going, and I kept thinking, I think they'll be done finally sometime. But about 3 hours later.
3 hours, yeah.
Yeah, they were done. Yeah. Okay, your turn.
Okay, well, you were mostly right.
Yeah.
You were mostly right.
See, I remembered.
Now, do you know how long ago that was?
Nope.
Think about it for one.
About 4 years.
So it was.
Has to be more.
It was actually 2018.
Is that right?
Can you believe that?
I can't, no.
Wow.
2018.
Yeah.
It's
That's what happens.
Stunning to me.
That's what happens when you're 102.
You were 95 when I met you.
Yeah.
95.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, you were a young chick. I thought you were old then. I thought you were old then, and you were just a young pup.
I know it, yeah.
So the way that it happened actually in the very beginning was a little bit different, because I had just, you know, this whole movie thing just fell in my lap. I was actually just an actress.
Oh, okay.
That was all I did. I did voiceovers on radio and television, and I, you know, that's all I did until Hunter went to Normandy.
Uh-huh.
And then I discovered what they did in Normandy, and I wanted to tell the American people about what they did there. And so Michelle Coupe, my co-producer, you know who she is.
Yeah.
She knew I wanted to interview veterans in the United States, but I really didn't know any.
Yeah.
So Flo Plana happened to be coming to Wheaton, Illinois, where I live. And she told me that he was coming to Cantini. It's the big red one has a museum.
Yeah,
five
right.
minutes from my house.
I think I've been to Cantini.
Have you? I live right by Cantini. And so Flo, she arranged.
I know I was.
Yeah. Yeah. So Flo Plana and I met, and we went to Cantini together. We got to know each other. And right after that, he was coming to interview you, and he asked me if I wanted to come along. And so he was coming with his mother as well. So his mother and I and Flo, and then my whole team of cameraman and soundman and lighting people, like ever, we all invaded your house.
You know what? I'd forgotten Flo came.
Yeah, he was there.
And his mother. I forgot that.
Yeah. It was a very special day because, you know, what was so interesting to me is Flo did the whole interview with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was
amazing I forgot that.
Yeah. Flo was...
Well, you said that you don't remember everything from the last decade, but you remember things from 8 decades ago. So that's fine.
Yeah, right.
So for those of you who don't know who Flo Plana is, Florent Plana is he's actually an amazing historian, but he's also a tour guide in Normandy, and he has World War II Veterans Memories. It's a tour company, and he has all social media is World War II Veterans Memories, and he's just an amazing, amazing man. And I highly respect him, but that was the first interview I have ever watched him do. And it was just magnificent. He came fully prepared. He understood all about not only the 95th Infantry Division, not only the 377th Infantry Regiment, but he understood about I Company, and he understood about, you know, their whole movements. And he began to ask CO questions as if he was part of I Company. He knew where they had been and what they had done. And so CO began to talk to him, and they really formed this camaraderie during the interview.
Right.
And he talked to him from the beginning of when he was born in Carson City, Michigan. And, you know, we got all the way to the end of the story, and it was masterful. And so I learned so much at that time. And what was interesting to me was that as Flo, a Frenchman, was talking to him, I realized that was the key moment for me in my whole experience of this film, The Girl Who Wore Freedom, because I watched you in that moment change from the moment that we got there to when we left. And you probably don't remember this either, but you got happier and happier and happier.
Yeah.
And by the time we left,
yeah,
you were dancing. You were dancing.
I danced a pump handle.
No, you were just dancing. It wasn't even the pump handle. You were just dancing, and you were marching for us, and you were so happy. And I thought, you know.
Well, I like to put out the word.
Well,
Motivated. I'm motivated by putting out the word. In fact, you know, I wind up saying to people, it's my duty.
You do. Yeah.
I've got the you know, the military. I don't exactly know quite the words to say, but you know, I got the discipline of the military, and I still got it. So
yeah, he still does still, marches still daily, and
oh wow. Yeah. Okay, well, they drill it into you, so yeah, there's no reason that you should lose that.
Yeah.
But what I saw was that as somebody cared about your story and yeah. somebody listened to you, just like Rob is doing,
yeah,
it made you feel cared about,
yeah,
and it made
yeah.
you feel happy.
Well,
and
it's therapy.
Yeah, it's therapy, yeah. And that therapy. Is how I learned that as Americans and civilians, we can truly show gratitude to our veterans. And that's the message of my film. And it's what the French told me. And it's what I really think is important. And it's not just for veterans, actually. What I've learned is that we need to do that not only to older citizens, but I mean, it's true for anyone.
That's true.
It's true for anyone.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah, you need to put it out, you know, and hope people will listen. You need to do the same thing.
Yeah. Yes. Do you tell your story, Rob, about yeah. your service?
Have I told it or will I tell it now?
Have you told it?
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I mean, talk it's about not, it?
Yeah, sure. There isn't that much to talk about, but yeah.
Your military service was compulsory, yeah?
No, actually, I volunteered.
You did. What years did yeah. you serve?
I started serving in 1993. I was in the regular army for 1 year, and then I did reserve duty for another 14 years after that.
Oh wow! Okay.
And reserve duty is basically one month a year.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, I've been to Israel.
Really?
Yeah.
Me too.
I took a I imagine I did the pump handle there, but
very possibly
call it. But
well, you yeah, probably I've, did it at the edge I, of the Red I, Sea. My guess I've, is
I've got the
Dead Sea.
Dead Sea.
Where's the Globus? I took the Globus tour.
Well, this.
Oh, they get that brochure there. Yeah. Yeah, I did this tour of Globus in Globus in 1995.
Okay, I was here.
You're here?
I came in 92. I've been here since 92.
I actually did Israel and Egypt.
Ah, very nice.
Yeah. And so I and it was a good tour. Really liked it. I swam in the Dead Sea.
Well, you can't really swim in it. You float in it.
I floated, yeah. Hard to get your feet down.
Correct.
Yeah.
That's the idea.
Yeah. You know, I floated in there, and it was surprising there wasn't anybody else in there but me.
It depends on what time of year you went.
The tour group went, and I don't know, they were on shore doing something, so I'm going to swim. So I had my swim coats, and I got on there, and I'd like to swim and see how it is. So I got in there, and they told me, don't put your head underwater, or, you know, that doesn't work. So I floated. But I'll always remember, you know, I kept thinking, maybe I'm getting too far out, you know. Floating out, maybe I'm getting.
You'll end up in Jordan.
Put my feet down, and I'll always remember. Jesus, it's an effort to put your feet down.
That's right.
They'll say, yeah. But I went to the River Jordan, and I'm a trout fisherman, a headwater trout fisherman, brook trout and trout. So I really really like that. To be on the headwaters, and I looked at the Jordan. I said, geez, I believe this is a trout stream.
Yeah.
probably is. I imagine they stock it. But I wasn't smart enough. I'm a guy that wings it. So I just took the tour. I'll see what happens, you know. Takes what happens. So we got to the Jordan River. I could have been baptized, but I didn't know.
Theoretically, yeah.
I hadn't G2'd to be baptized because I just didn't pay attention. But there was people from four women, ladies from Pennsylvania that paid attention. So they disappeared right away and went, you know, to have the showers and put on a robe to be baptized. All I could do was watch, because I didn't do it. All I could do was watch, and I could stick my toe in my feet in the Jordan River. So I did that.
Well, yeah. I think the Lord probably knows in your heart that yeah. you wanted to.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
Hey, you can come back and do it now.
Yeah.
Never too late.
Yeah.
You know, CEO, last night, I don't want us to get away from this podcast without him sharing one last thing. Last night, CEO and I were talking, and he was telling me about a time that he went back to Europe. And there was a woman who had written a speech and read it to the liberators. And he read it to me, and it was particularly meaningful to him and the other guys that were there. Would you share this with him?
Yeah. Can he see it?
He can.
Yeah, I can see it.
He can see it.
I can see it, but I want to hear it.
Yeah.
I want to hear it. Yeah.
Yeah. And we'll put it up on the YouTube. We'll put a picture.
I don't think Christian realized this until I really told her last night that he just went to the restroom or something.
He's back.
No, I went to close the door.
You're back.
My son came into the room, opened the door, and forgot to close it when he left. Sorry. Yes.
I don't think Christian realized the significance of this until I read it last night. We were discussing movies, the movies of World War II movies. That it occurred, and the fact that for you it was a thing that you did to study them, but I, in fact, I was saying, you know, that there's they are a story, you know, and that they have to be enhanced somewhat in order to be sold to the public, for the public to show up to them. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I said. Said that we fought at the 50th anniversary. We veterans at Mets, we 95th, were finally thanked. And it was an unusual thing that we were thanked. This lady, Elizabeth Gozzo, G-O-Z-Z-O, at one of the surrounding small towns, around Metz. We had the small towns around Metz. They like to get into the act, kind of. They like to have you come there, and the mayor will be there, and they'll hold the ceremony and maybe bring you in for some Mirabelle, you know, some of the local spirit, and into the Hotel de Ville. Anyway, Elizabeth Gozzo, and I didn't know her at the time, got up, and we probably had at the 50th anniversary the most World War 95th Division veterans that ever showed up. We probably had 50 or so. So we're down to one now that shows. That's me. But, but Elizabeth got up and off of a handwritten copy read this. And I start to tear up when I start to talk about it, because she finally thanked us in a way that we could understand. Just a local citizen.
Wow.
I'd been to a lot of ceremonies before, but heard authorities and mayors talk and all that, but Elizabeth did it. So I'll read it for you. Dear liberators, dear American friends, we want to give expression to our deepest gratitude to you for what you did for us in 1944. I got to put on my glasses. So I'm tearing up and can't read. What you did for us in 1944, we know the terrible cost of our freedom. After a few years spent under the cruel Nazi boot, France was bloodless. French people daily lived the humiliation, the fear, the denunciations, the threat of torture, and the concentration camp. It was a nightmare. And then you came. In an irresistible impulse, you appeared like a fabulous sunbeam after a terrible 4 years long night, like a blessing from God. All those young Americans sacrificed. You wrote a page in our history, and without any doubt, it is the most beautiful. You offered us the most wonderful present in the world, liberty. But at what cost? At what price? All these young Americans sacrificed in the spring of their life. All these inhuman suffering which wounded your bodies and your souls, all that you endured, rend our hearts and pain us. We are so much indebted to you, we have for you the highest respect. You are our heroes who defeated the barbarism and who saved us. You are our dear liberators. We'll never forget you. And our gratefulness for you is deep and endless. You are graven in our hearts. Thank you wholeheartedly. Thanks, GIs. God bless you all. God bless America. We love you. I never heard it better.
Wow. That is amazing.
It's typical French. You know, the French there. They've just got it to express themselves. I guess it's because of the Roman influence in France. I guess it is, but
I don't know.
I've talked to Elizabeth before. After that, she showed up and. She's had a stroke. I talked to her this last November. I did not long, because I was under control of circumstances had me under going from place to place, bang bang, and I couldn't talk long, but. Elizabeth, you know, was a great person. She came to the USA even, one reunion. She and her daughter did.
Oh, wow.
You know, it's, I think, too, what I've learned is that it really is not just the French, honestly. It's, I've also seen this spirit in the people that live in Luxembourg and the people that live in the Netherlands. Uh-huh. And it's really when you've been oppressed, like she said, I mean, after a few years spent under the cruel Nazi boot, you know, they lived in humiliation and fear and denunciations and tortures in the concentration camps, and they lived in a nightmare. And when you live like that and someone comes to your rescue, I think that grateful spirit, they can't help but feel that way about you.
Oh, I know it.
The
French have passed that on. They're teaching it to their kids. Their kids know it. They want to touch the veterans, and they wanted our signature, and they just wanted, and then they would like to talk to you if you got time, if you can talk to them. But you, Kim, sitting over there. My niece is sitting across from me listening and smiling, but when when she and her husband, when I hit 80, I said, somebody better go with me. You know, I was going with the crew, but somebody better go. So Kim and Carl volunteered to go. That's the first time Kim really understood what happened. And when she went to the cemeteries, you know, like Saint of Old, and went to the World War I cemeteries, then she really understood what had occurred, you know, literally in my lifetime. And so she just came home and said, well, we got to take more next time. So every 5 years, we've taken the family, you know, wow, whoever will go. We've taken 12 to 15 people for every year since the 50th. So, and we were in Normandy and with about 18 or 19 in our family last year. We were, that term that Elizabeth used up there, you'll hear that at Metz. You'll hear French come up to you and say it. They just say, all those young Americans, they're referring to, really, to St. of Old Military Cemetery.
Yeah.
The 8 or 10,000 point markers that are there.
Right.
Referring to. And, you know, out of my rifle company, I'm not sure how many men in my rifle company are buried there, but my first time there with my buddy Bodner, we didn't look up any names, but we just started walking and aimlessly, and we'd come across somebody out of our rifle company. And that was a moving experience to do that. Most of them we knew they were killed, but we didn't necessarily knew they were buried there. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow, this has been such an amazing experience for me to be able to talk to you about all this stuff, Theo. I really do appreciate you being willing to take the time to tell your story so that I can know it, and you know, all of my listeners can know the story, and that Christian can have this also for her uses on her website, and you know, also for posterity, so that we have this. You know, we now have a record of this, which is great. So thank you very much for taking the time today.
There's something else I should tell you. Communication was such before World War II that we just had radio, and a lot of times we didn't have that. And so I did not know about the Pearl Harbor being bombed, because I was out on a farm and my parents were away, and I did not know about it for a full day until the newspaper came the next afternoon. Can you imagine that happening today? So we don't have the television instant by instant coverage that we have today. So and that's hard to explain to a current generation people that they don't understand that we didn't. But in my instance, and most of our instance, I will tell you that I did not believe the atrocities that were being committed by our enemy, because it just didn't seem reasonable to the. And I think a good share of the Americans and a good share of the Allied military troops, it's pretty well documented, were amazed, surprised when they uncovered the concentration camps.
Yeah.
Certainly, some of our political, people, our national leaders certainly knew that, but it didn't get to the general public. And probably it may have in Europe, but here in Europe it didn't. And so I just thought I should put that out because
let you
know it, because it is important. You know, I did hear on tours. I did hear the word. Well, you know, we didn't do anything. Well, in my view, we just didn't realize it. But the other thing, we didn't really have a military anyway, you know, of consequence at all in World War II. We had to start out from scratch. I guess we had quite a lot of Navy, but we didn't have an army.
Right.
Yeah. The guys were training with wooden rifles, you know. So
I want to show you his army picture while we're at it. Look at this handsome guy.
Oh, wow.
And if you're just listening, again, you can go to YouTube and see his picture. We'll put it up. But yeah, pretty awesome, huh?
Yeah. Yeah.
Look at you, handsome devil.
Yeah, well, there's goddamn few of us left.
That's true. Rob, we appreciate you having us on. Thank you so much for listening. I know we've taken up so much of your time today.
Yeah.
Every minute was worth it. No question about that.
Thank you. Yeah, well, good luck. Well, you're a veteran too, so yeah.
Thank you.
you know, good luck to the Israeli Army. The Allies established Israel, really.
Correct.
Mm-hmm. Correct. Because Palestine was a protectorate of the British.
Correct.
Correct. And I understand that. I kind of remember being surprised by that, by on the movies or the news I got, being kind of surprised by that. But I really understand that we need to continue to support Israel, you know, because they're not in a good situation where they are. I do though kind of feel that we need to stop the fighting if we can, find some reasonable basis to do it. And we need to do that everywhere in the world.
That is true. Very true.
We do. Because
everyone wants peace. We want peace everywhere.
We have to remember that people are dying. And there are a lot of times they're innocent people. And whatever effort we can do, we need to do. And God needs to show us the way.
It's true.
Yep.
Very true. That's very true.
Well, thank you so much.
Christian, do you want to just tell people, you know, what your website is so that they can get in touch if they want?
I would love that. So the film is called The Girl Who Wore Freedom. You can find out more about that and watch the trailer at thegirlwhowarefreedom.com. If you're in America, you can see the film on Amazon, Apple TV, Vudu, Google, YouTube. Unfortunately, if you're in Israel or anywhere outside of the United States, it's very difficult. I don't know that you can see the film yet. But if you're a distributor anywhere else, we'd love to talk to you. My email is christian@documentaryfirst. Our production company is documentaryfirst.com. And our social media is all Documentary First at, you know, Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, all of those things. And yeah, we'd love to hear from anyone that wants to talk to us. So if people want to write CO emails or letters, you can send them to me, christian@documentaryfirst, and I will make sure that he gets them. I like to send him things from people that that want to communicate with him. So yeah. I'll be happy to do that.
All right. Excellent. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, you can find me on Instagram. You can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to movierobminute@movierob.net. So once again, thank you both for joining me today. I will be back tomorrow with another interview. But until then, earn this.
Yep.
Earn this.
Yep. What did you say?
Earn this. Earn it. Like you've got to earn it.
Oh, okay. I'm going to wind up with what I always say over France. Vive la France. Long live the United States of America and our free world allies.
Amen. Thank you.
And I always say on my podcast, which is Documentary First, you can find that wherever you get your podcast. Bye, everybody.
I hope that you guys were as moved as I was by this episode, especially hearing that Rob was also in the military. And listening to that heartfelt letter of thanks from the French citizen named Elizabeth just gives me chills. It's even more meaningful because, of course, I've been over there and I've seen in person how thankful the French people are. CEO also reflected on what it meant to bring his family back to France and to walk the beaches of Normandy, where he witnessed firsthand that deep gratitude of the French people for their liberation. There really is nothing like it. He could have gone on for hours, as can I, and honestly, we would have listened to him. You would have too if you were in person sitting around with CEO. He is passionate and he has a heart full of stories, and we are honored just to share a few of them with you today. And thanks for joining us. We really, really appreciate you listening and spending your time. Please share this episode with anyone you think will enjoy it. Thank you for listening to Documentary First, where we believe everyone has a story to tell, and you can be the one to tell it. Bye, everybody. Follow Documentary First on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and LinkedIn. This podcast was produced by Documentary First, edited and mixed by Jason Hoban, with music by Jeff Kurtenacker.